You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast, where we discuss a team that gives everybody exactly what they want. The Columbus Crew. You like great team soccer. You like hardware. 2 trophies in 10 months. You like a ragged, tired team that lacks creativity and urgency? If that's your thing, well, we got that too, as evidenced on Sunday afternoon in Philadelphia. It's a short panel here so far tonight. We hope that Bart Logan will be able to join us here in a few minutes. Sam Fahmy is not too far from me here in Westerville at the controls. And Ori Benatar joins as well. And Ori, we're really going to lean on you tonight. As we compare and contrast the joy that we had, let's see, that was even a week ago, hoisting the Campeones Cup, a game that we played with such fervor and with an idea of what we wanted to do. And then on Sunday, not so much. We'll get to that here in a moment. But first, Ori, please thank our lovely sponsor.
I was muted when I said we should. Now I'm saying we should, because Saucy Brewworks is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Go down to Saucy Brewworks. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Watch some sports, have some food, drink some beverages, have a good time with your buddies. Go to Saucy Brewworks.
And like and subscribe to the Mass Report podcast if you would. It's a great time of year to go to Saucy and watch sports. On Sunday, it was insanity as I tried to watch the Mariners and the Seahawks and the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Crew. And it was fun, not going to lie, but it was a lot to keep up with. And the Crew didn't give us much to look at. Do we want to work backwards from Philadelphia to the Campeones Cup? Or what I was thinking, Ori, and help me out here, can you do a little compare and contrast between the two matches? They're both against great teams. Yeah. Why did we look so good against one and so terrible against another?
I mean, just based on the way the matches were going, I would say urgency was the biggest thing that I noticed, because what's kind of nuts is if you look back at a lot of the Crew games this year, if you're looking at the moments when the offense seemed to have the most urgency, was trying to play through the middle, run at defenders, and not rely fully on wingers and wingbacks to cross into Jossy Zardes with 3 defenders around him, they really show that urgency when they're either 1-0 up or 2-0 down. Against Cruz Azul, they went 1-0 up after 4 minutes. Zellerian free kick just whips it in, and the guy just heads it off of himself. It was the striker for Cruz Azul, one of their top scorers, who put it in his own net. And then the Crew played, and Caleb Porter discussed it. He knew that a 5-back would be the formation to play against Cruz Azul. He said if they maybe didn't play a 5-back, that they don't win that game, because it's a team that's very good at sort of playing with each other, good interlinking combination. And Cruz Azul created a lot of chances, with the Crew essentially being in the low block for the entire game. But you saw the Crew attempt counterattacking transitions. Darlington Nagbe, who for me was the man of the match, not Lucas Zellerayan.
Yeah, I mean, let's face great. It,
that man of the match trophy one is tiny. It's as small as me. But at the same time, it was fan voted. And Zellerayan is sort of the face of the team, especially being a former Liga MX player. But Nagbe was the best player on the pitch that day. He was running into the space in the middle of the field. There was a ton of it, because Cruz Azul sent a ton of numbers forward as they were passing around the Crew defense. The low block worked. And also Miguel Barry was doing the same thing. Barry had a couple of breakouts there where he had Etienne running towards his side, Santos trying to overlap as well. And the Crew looked like they could have potentially gotten a second goal. They eventually did, off of a good cross, Jonathan Mensah header. You didn't see that against Philly, and you saw the same formation against Philly. It was essentially a 3-back with Morera and Valenzuela playing as the wingbacks. I thought the formation was interesting against a 4-4-2, but it didn't really work against the 4-4-2. But at the same time, the first half, Caleb Porter discussed it right after, they were losing the ball. They were passing to the other team, dispossessed a lot, which is very unlike the Columbus Crew. That's not how Caleb Porter wants his guys to play. And you didn't see that urgency offensively in the first 45 minutes. There was not as much running towards the middle of the field. Philadelphia is a great defensive team, one of the best in MLS. But you didn't see that, you know, taking on some of the midfielders, taking on some of the defenders. It was a lot of that wide play that we've seen most of the season, where in this case we saw Morera Santos, Valenzuela, and I think it was Diaz trying to basically just get crosses in, or Zellerian actually most of the game. And Zellerian for me as on the wing is not nearly as effective as he is in the middle of the pitch. Mm-hmm. But urgency wise, you didn't see that offensive urgency until they went 2-0 down and Philadelphia got a man sent off in the second half. Then the Crew started actually running at defenders, trying to score a goal, taking some shots. I'm not saying they weren't trying to score a goal in the first half, but they just weren't creative offensively during that time. 1-0 up against Cruz Azul, and it looked like they were going to get a second. Darlington mm-hmm. Nagbe was running into that space, picking up fouls, forcing free kicks. Miguel Berry the same, just a couple missed passes, and the Crew could have scored three goals in the Campeones Cup. But you just didn't see that against Philly. And that, for me, is that Philly game on Sunday, that's the worst performance the Crew has had all season.
Well, yeah, and you write the What We Learned column for massreport.com, and I feel like we didn't really learn anything other than what we already knew. This team just doesn't play on the road. And a lot of MLS clubs, for whatever reason, don't perform on the road. And that's certainly true of Columbus Crew. And this was the most glaring example. It was just kind of embarrassing. And at a time when they can ill afford, they have six matches left. And as we saw in baseball, you know, it was interesting, the dynamic of the AL wildcard and how you had Toronto and Seattle right there. They were right there. But to get over that last peak, to get past Boston and New York, they were so close and yet so far. And here we have the Crew 6 points back of the last playoff spot. And 6 points, you go, we can make that up. Then you have to do a lot of math. And when you do the math real fast, you discover that the chance is almost zero at this point, isn't it?
Not almost zero. It's very low. Like, I think if you look at 538's percentages, it's probably less than 10% right now. That loss to Philly was a huge denter in the playoff chances. And like you mentioned with the baseball, Toronto and Seattle, one game out of Boston and the Yankees, Toronto did its job and won, but they still needed help. They need one of Boston or the Yankees to lose. For any team in any sport, especially in the United States with playoffs, you want to be able to control your own destiny. And if the Crew was able to get a point on the road or win this game against Philly, then they still would have been in a position where they could control their own destiny a little bit. At this point, with six games left, they need teams to lose. They can't just win games. And that's really tough for a team that they can't control their own fate towards the playoffs. It's not a position anybody thought the Crew was going to be in this season with all the preseason expectations, but here we are. Four games are at home. They have to win those games. If they lose any one of those home games, then I think there's no shot they make the playoffs. You need a miracle at that point. Two matches left on the road against Nashville and DC. I think at this point, try and get at least 2 points out of those games, get some draws. But Josh Williams talked to us after the game. I've never seen him more sort of disappointed and frustrated with what had happened. He was incredibly frustrated with the performance. He said it was embarrassing. And he mentioned the road mentality. For some reason, this team just doesn't have the same mentality on the road that they do at home. And that's not good for a team's chemistry. It's not good for a team's psyche, because you might expect the game to go more your way, but you're playing on the road now with fans in the stands, which makes it harder for any team. And what's crazy is that I wrote this in What We Learned. In the past two seasons, the Crew and the Chicago Fire are the only two teams in MLS with only two road wins or less. Everybody else has at least more than two road wins in the last two seasons. The Crew have only won two road games since 2020 because they didn't have any last year. But road form is something the league struggles with. You've got three teams that are in playoff positioning. Philadelphia, the team that the Crew just lost to, has only two wins on the road this year. So that's why it's even more vital to win home games. And the fact that the Crew have actually lost games at home, big loss to DC, big loss to Atlanta, not being able to close out that game against Seattle is going to come back to bite them if they don't make the playoffs too.
Yeah.
So, but at this point, they don't control their own destiny. They need help from the other teams in the East. They're all going to be eating away at each other because they're all going to be playing each other during this home stretch. But they need the 2 weeks to recuperate and really sort of put things into perspective and say, we have to take matters into our own hands, do whatever we can to make our chances better. And that means running around, attacking with more emphasis, being a little more creative. They can play in different formations, but it doesn't help when you're not utilizing the formation to actually try attacking creative football. If you're just looking for the wings to cross into nobody into the box and keepers recovering, then you're not going to help yourself.
Do they, I imagine that you could find numbers for everything, but this idea that, as you say, bombing down the wing and crossing the ball seems of all the offensive tactics in the beautiful game to be suboptimal in terms of your odds of success. And that's not to say that there's not a time and a place for it, but man, so many balls this season when we've looked to score that way have just gone begging. It's kind of like our lack of corner kick success for the most part. So you keep doing the same thing over and over again. And that's what they always say. And that's what's so irritating about this Philadelphia game. I really felt like we showed creativity, even though we played a very defensive game against Cruz Azul. How Caleb Porter chose to approach that game was obviously the right way to do it, and they took full advantage of it. That's not necessarily the way you want to play against Philadelphia, because they're just kind of a defensive team. It's going to be a struggle. But for guys like Josh Williams, as was pointed out in the game grades, for him to fail on so many headers, 6 of 9 headers he lost, that's not something we're used to seeing. It goes to the point where, this team can survive with these good defenders and good goalkeeping. But if that breaks down at all, and we've seen it a lot this year, where it breaks down just enough that we can't overcome it because we just don't score enough.
No, because the crew really lack multiple playmakers. Like Lucas Elorean is a playmaker, but MLS has figured out how to basically stop him. He scored 7 goals this year. 5 of them are on direct free kicks. That's how he's affecting most MLS matches this season. He's not nearly as effective as he was in open play because defenders know how to defend against him. They got guys crowding all over him.
Sure.
Outside of Elorean creating in the middle, there's not much else. On the wings, you see Derek Etienne. He's a little bit indecisive sometimes. On the wing, Luis Diaz just doesn't have the final touch to cross the ball and accurately. Nope. He had a good shot against Philly with his left foot that forced it didn't force a save. It was close to hitting the top corner. That was probably the closest Diaz shot outside of his goal this season. But you need to be accurate on the crosses for the wingers if you're going to play that way. But the crew just lack multiple playmakers. So you need to be able to have at least another guy on the pitch that can help create plays. Pedro Santos tries to help that a little bit, but he's not like Lucas Elorean in that regard, in my opinion. So, as soon as the defense sort of falls apart, it just doesn't seem like the game is at a point where they can come back from it. But they've come back from 2-0 deficits before, but that's the problem. They can't just start playing after they go down 2-0. And that's something that's been happening essentially all season. Whenever they take leads, they usually win, but they haven't taken enough leads this year. And they need to do more of that in order to earn some points here with 6 games to go.
This is going to sound really stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is Lucas seeing the ball too much? And now we can just crowd him up. And obviously Jossie's not seeing the ball nearly enough. And when Jossie gets his touches, as we saw against Montreal, good things happen. The goal that he scored with his left foot, the second goal of the Montreal game, was Lucas making a diagonal run away and distracting the defense, opening up space for Jossie. That's the kind of stuff that we need to see. And that's Lucas making a play without having the ball on the top. So you see a lot where Lucas gets the ball anywhere on the field and instantly has 3 guys and he's trying to dribble out of it. And always. Maybe he just sees too much of the ball. Does that make any sense?
No, I don't know if he sees too much of the ball. Whenever he has the ball, because he's got defenders around, he always tries an extra move. It's always usually a move extra for Lucas Elorean when he's trying to dribble out of space. He always gets by one guy. And then when the second guy comes along, instead of making an open outlet, you usually try to see him dribble past another player. That happened against Philadelphia. But you bring up Montreal game. Look at the goals that they scored. fast transition on the first goal, quick passing. Etienne makes a beautiful cross to Zardes.
Yeah.
As the defenders are out of space, when you're passing around slowly in the back and doing possession football and then try to get it out on the wing, the defense on the opposition side has more time to organize themselves, which is why a lot of the time when you see Diaz or Santos or Etienne, sometimes Matan, on wide trying to cross it into Zardes, there's always usually two or three defenders around them because the defenses are organized at that point. Zardes was running at the Montreal defense in that game for the second goal. He just decided to take a shot. You need to see more of those accurate shots. The Crew take those occasionally, but you need to have that urgency when it's 0-0. And even 1-0 up against Montreal, they show that urgency. There's just not enough consistency in what the offense is putting out. The crosses, if they're not working, they need to try more of what they did against Montreal, because those types of goals is what makes the offense, it gives the offense momentum. It makes the fans happy because you hear a roar from the crowd. I'm sure fans are going nuts after that Zardes goal. It was an amazing finish. Best goal of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was right in front of me. It was great.
Got to see more from that offense. And at this point, you know, guys are mostly healthy. It's the end of the road for the season. You got to put everything out there in terms of stamina and sprinting and everything like that. The fact that I just don't think we saw enough of that sprinting going forward against Philly. And it's like, there's not another game for 2 weeks. Might as well go after it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, could this also, and I'm just grasping at straws here, like my dumb question about Lucas having too much of the ball. Do you understand kind of what I'm getting at there though? If other guys are making their possession count, it takes the pressure off of him, because a lot of times I think he's looking to just, well, I have to beat everybody and then I have to score.
You know? Yeah. No, so, I can see that for sure.
Also, this kind of just occurred to me, and I don't know how other teams approach this. I know in soccer, you know, you try to tailor a game plan tactically to who you're playing. That's pretty obvious. But are we rebuilding the machine too much every game? And maybe we need to arrive at sort of a basic guts of who we are and how we want to play. Because it sure seems like we're kind of, well, we're going to do this here, we're going to do that there. And yeah, it's sort of like you're trying to piece together these lineups as the season goes along, and you have injuries and call-ups and so forth. And so guys are being asked to do things that they're not able to do. I'm just grasping at straws here, Ori.
I get that for sure. The fact that, I mean, Caleb Porter mentioned it, and other players have mentioned it too. For most of this season, the Crew have basically pieced lineups together, and guys haven't earned their spots in the lineup because they just have to put 11 men out there. And you have guys in certain positions that are the only ones available in those positions. Look at the center mid spot this year. Artur's been injured. Perry Kitchen's been injured. Aiden Morris got injured. So you saw Marlon Harrison come in. You saw Liam Frazier come into the club and be, you know, a new piece in there. Who's, I think Liam Frazier's turned out to be a decent signing. Definitely not Artur, but I think not having Artur, you know, has really diminished the opportunity to play the way they want to play in that 4-2-3-1, because Artur kind of, you know, steps back as a stopper. He can play a lot with Mensah and Williams in the back in terms of short passes, and you're able to use Nagby more to transition the offense. When Nagby has to play more of a holding role and sometimes has to defend a little bit more because he doesn't have Artur, in against Philly, you're having Marlon Harrison and Nagby in there. Harrison, yes, he can defend, but he's not a natural CDM like Artur or Frazier is. So it definitely doesn't let Nagby be a little bit more free in transition. He was able to do that against Cruz Azul more. And even against Montreal, we saw that too. And I know Sam has got something.
Yeah, I think you're missing the one thing that you couldn't replace with Artur is his passing. Especially that he was, like, as you look at the end of 2020 and even the beginning of 2021, he was starting to find that like offensive streak. And so you're kind of taking that load off of Nagby a little bit. You're taking the load off of the rest of the midfield a little bit because you have two guys that can precision pass that also have the ability to score. And that's kind of what you saw in the Cruz Azul game, is that Nagby was on a different level. Like at any point he could have probably, if he took the shot, he may have scored. But that kind of struck, you don't normally say that, but that kind of struck the fear in the Cruz Azul defense that leaves them vulnerable. So yeah, Harrison and Frazier did fine from a defensive standpoint, but that offensive side of that defensive midfielder game was not, is just, is not there. And it never was there this year, ever since he went out. But to the other point that Ori mentioned, I think that it's hard to keep picking yourself up to score goals when you start out the game down one or two. Because
especially on goals that you should not be giving up, because that free kick from 30 yards from the defense, you can't give up a goal like
that. That was a head turner. What do you make of that? Did he just, I mean, the wall was two guys, and he just sort of, obviously the shooter, and forgive me, I forget who scored the goal.
It was Jack Elliott.
He picked out a lane, but he just sort of like skipping a rock on a placid lake.
Pretty much. a placid lake. Wow, you should write poetry, Brian.
And, you know, Bush never saw it, near as I could figure, right?
Yeah, the two-man wall, I understand. You don't really see that as a threatening free kick situation. You know, Jacob Gleznes is a guy who plays for Philly, a center back, who he can rip those from that area. So you maybe thought Gleznes was going to take it, but Elliott stepped up, capable of shooting from that distance. But two-man wall that separated at the kick, I don't think Bush was in a great position. I think he was a little too close to that far post, so he didn't give himself enough time to react to the dive.
He was probably looking for it up, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, sometimes you just do that and it works. An example that comes to mind, Champions League last year, Porto against Juventus, Porto in extra time, takes a free kick from like 32 yards. The guy just kicks it underneath the wall because Ronaldo and the Juventus wall jumped up, right, and it just went in the net, and Porto beat Juventus and eliminated them. So sometimes you just take those chances, but I get what Sam is saying. It can totally demoralize you, and this team has not really been able to pick themselves back up so quickly often, you know, even when they were down 2-0, it's not like they scored a goal instant reply like that against New England. Jossie Zardes took about 10, 15 minutes. That was a good reply in that game because you're able to get one back in the first half. Zellerion scored a thunderbolt against Cincy in the next game after that. So they've been able to come back in those moments, but you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to not put yourself in that situation all the time, because that's what they've been doing this season. And then to give up the second goal 30 seconds into the second half, you know, Alejandro Bedoya basically ran 40, 45 yards with nobody near him and then passed it out wide. And he just runs into space. Great run. Leaves himself just outside the six. The Union guy crosses it to Bedoya and he just pokes it home past Bush to make it 2-0, 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
So if the key for me, if they haven't been doing this enough this season, the last six games of the year, the Crew have to take the lead in all of them. That's how they're going to be able to win out and keep themselves in this playoff race. If they go down in these games, they're just making life so much harder for them. They got to go out there and take 1-0 leads.
This game is hard. This game is hard.
Do we realistically think that the Crew can win out? I don't.
No.
I don't either. Just based on the way MLS is and the randomness of it, I don't know if they can, and they're playing really tough teams. I mean, Miami is a lot better than they used to be. Nashville is fantastic. Nashville's tied half of its games, but Hani Mukhtar, in my opinion, might be the MVP of the league. He's played phenomenally this season.
Well, I like them going back to last year's playoffs. I was very – when that match was over, like, this is a team that's going places. And they've certainly done well this year. I mean, really, the only game where you go, ah, that's a slam dunk, is the final one, Chicago. But at that point, it may not matter.
Right, because we have to see what happens in all these other games.
Other games, I mean, Miami, as much of a joke as they were early in the season, they're playing pretty well enough. So, and then you got Red Bulls, you know, they've been a disappointment this year. Orlando City's right up there. DC United, we caught them early in the old place, seems like years ago at this point, but they've picked their game up since then, you know. So it's – I don't see it happening. I can't believe that when we do our season wrap, which is probably coming after the Chicago game, a couple days, like November 9th, we're going to do that because we're not going to go to the playoffs. And we're going to discuss what this club needs to be competitive again. And I can't believe we're going to have that discussion.
Yeah.
But that's the talk we're going to have.
Yeah. It's pretty mind-boggling what this season has turned into. It's crazy also that the East, there's only 3 points separating third and eighth.
Yeah.
It is so close. It is mind-numbingly close. It's also nuts that we're sitting here mainly talking about a disappointing performance against Philly that happened a few days after the Crew had a amazing club achievement, winning its first international trophy. They're one of five MLS clubs ever to win an international trophy. Yeah. I think they're one of only three to have won a Supporters Shield, MLS Cup, US Open Cup, and a Campeones or like a CONCACAF Champions League. It's an incredible achievement for the club. They've won two trophies in 10 months. They beat Cruz Azul in essentially a road game because there were a ton of Cruz Azul fans at Lower.com Field Wednesday night. But when you follow that up with your worst performance in the regular season against Philly, it's hard to sort of celebrate that. So I kind of want to pose a question to you guys. Would you trade the Campeones Cup win for a better perform for a win against Philly and keeping the playoff hopes alive? Would you rather make the MLS Cup playoffs than win Campeones Cup?
At this point, I don't know. Sam's shaking his head.
No.
In the context of where we are right now, I would say no. If I had to choose one or the other, at this point, even walking away with a win over Philadelphia on Sunday, our chances wouldn't be particularly good anyway when you look at the remaining schedule. So, no. I greatly enjoyed last Wednesday. I enjoyed it way more, and it was way more important to me than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Winning a trophy is important.
I mean, if you look at our text conversation that was happening throughout the game, Ori. At the beginning of the game, just looking at the crowd, just looking at the field, just looking at how everything had gone this year and the last 15 games, you're like, we're going to get our butts kicked.
That's what I thought.
We are going to get drilled so hard by this really good team who is playing pretty much its starting lineup, and it's going to suck. But when that first goal got scored, you're like, what just happened? Right. And then the Crew, I don't want to say dominated, but in as best as you can say dominated with 25% possession. But you always felt that they were more dangerous. Now, granted, every time Cruz Azul went up to the attacking third, you felt that they were going to score because we have that habit of giving away really dumb goals. And, you know, they were pressing as pressing gets. But that defense, you know, the seven players that played defense played out of their mind. They They just intercepted and cleared the ball. If this was hockey, it would be icing every 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of like playoff hockey where you get a lead, you just sit on it, you don't care how it looks. But it looked good enough. It was an entertaining game. Right. And I felt like Cruz Azul was stunned, and not only stunned by the resistance that they were getting, but I also felt like they were a bit perplexed by the officiating. I think they were expecting the game to be adjudicated differently.
The first half, the ref, the Cruz Azul players, all they could do was yell at the official about the calls. That was the best officiated game between an MLS and the MX team I've ever seen.
It was really good. And I'm not
Fouls on the Crew too, but the Crew weren't making as many fouls as Cruz Azul.
I got to say something. This was probably the cleanest game I've seen from a Mexican team. Like, there wasn't a lot of diving. There wasn't a lot of, like, I got hit with a sniper bullet in the eye type of thing. There wasn't a lot of that. I was honestly surprised, and I was quite impressed that they came in. They wanted to play a game, maybe not 100% clean, but compared to other CONCACAF games that have been played against Latin American teams in general, whether it's on the national team level or on the club level, this was probably one of the cleanest I've seen a Latin American team play.
I think part of it also was the fact that they were in a hole. You don't often see an MLS team go up 1-0 against a Liga MX team in 5 minutes. So you see a lot in those, like, look at the Monterrey game as a good example. Monterrey was trying to impose its will on the official with some diving, with some physical play. They had the lead, and they were attempting to basically get Zelarayán suspended, which they succeeded at, but they weren't trying to kill the game at that point. You would try to impose your will on the ref, try to get him to call some fouls on your opponent. You didn't see, I think Cruz Azul couldn't afford to do that as much because they had to play the whole game trying to get an equalizer.
Right.
Also, speaking of Zelarayán, he takes no shit from other Mexican soccer teams. Like, the game that he played, you're like, he is angry, he is going to win this trophy, and he's going to force his will upon Cruz Azul. And
what do you think the conversations were on the field? Because the Lucas knows those guys and went to war against them many times. I would love for everyone to be mic'd up and it's have it translated for me.
Yeah, it's probably not safe for work.
No,
but also now you have two players on the Crew that have won the Campeones Cup twice.
Yeah.
Darlington Nagbe. You want to talk about a serial winner? Darlington Nagbe is a serial winner. He's won two Campeones Cups, three MLS Cups, an NCAA championship. Yeah. What else has he won? I think I made a graphic for it. I didn't get a chance to post it yet.
At least one goal of the year.
Speaking of graphics, we'll laugh about the Austin design for USA Jamaica here in just a few minutes.
We'll spend a little time here at the end,
kind of giving you an overview of what we can expect from a great window of World Cup qualifying coming up. So much going on. So we'll get to that here in just a moment. Well, yeah, you're right. And I was one of the wet blankets the last time we assembled as far as this Campeones Cup goes. But I'll tell you what, I got sucked into it. And even if we had lost, that would have been a bummer. But I did enjoy the game way more than I thought I was going to enjoy it. I love the atmosphere. I love the national television exposure for our new park. And it was just fun. You know, it was just fun. So I'll admit when I was wrong, and I was wrong. And I complain about CONCACAF officials more than anyone. And I have to say the center, and I know I've seen this referee before. We go, where have I seen this guy before? I know I've seen him before. He did a great job. You guys are right. He did a great job. And that's not an easy gig to keep a lid on the rough play and to keep the game moving and to sort of just let all the yelling and screaming in his ear roll off his back. I thought he did a great job. So it was a fantastic experience for the Crew. And I think that's just going to have to suffice, right? We have to accept it. It's just going to have to suffice. And we'll see where we go. Maybe some sort of miracle here down the stretch, but I don't see it happening. Where are we at real quick with Eloy Room? Is he close?
I would assume by the time they play Miami in 2 weeks, at the time of recording this, he will probably be ready to play, I would assume. I think by the time the 2 weeks are up, you're probably looking at Eloy Room being ready. Our tour will probably be closer. I don't know yet. Yeah. We'll have to see. But if you look at the roster right now, most of the key players are healthy. You know, now you have a choice of center backs. You got Milton Valenzuela ready. Multiple right backs to choose from in Moreira, Aful, and Saad Abdul Salam. A couple CMs, a couple of wingers, a couple of strikers. So this is the healthiest the team has been, and they need to take advantage of that in these last six games.
Absolutely. All right. So the international window is opening in 2 days hence. We play Jamaica down in Austin. Sam, I trust your eye. You're such a great photographer, and your sensibilities, I trust.
Oh, boy.
When you look at the poster for the Austin debut in the international stage with USA and Jamaica on Thursday, what do you see and what do you think they were trying to achieve with this graphic design? And I wish this was a video podcast right now so that we could show this, but just, you know, Google it, look it up. What is it that you see when you look at it?
You see a part of the male anatomy wrapped in a rope. For a second, I thought it was trying to be Florida, which I'm like,
which
okay,
you
this
don't want to be,
weird. But that's yeah, but that wasn't it. And then I looked at it like, I'm like, I'm not like, I like what anyway, I have to go to the comments in order for somebody until I found somebody who actually pointed out, and then I was like, oh. Okay, I see that it's supposed to be the legs of a player.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Which
I
get yes, that out of so it. It's a player.
Like, I was confused.
Yeah, no, but some of the imagery is a little,
Yes, so it's the legs of a player running basically what ends up looking like somebody's dick is his foot.
With the whole
his
thing. Foot
behind his thigh.
Oh.
So it's like, oh. Okay. From a design standpoint, this is great idea. The photo of the leg could have been different, or you could have emphasized the separation between the foot and the thigh so it doesn't look like, you know, a male body part. Having said that, you always see those things and you think this design passed through at least half a dozen people, all of them most likely, which are male, and none of them said anything about it or caught it or thought, you know, could we pause for a second? Because it wasn't just that part. It's that and then the rope around it. And you're like, this is just making it worse. But because it was designed by somebody from Austin, we will also make fun of it endlessly.
Oh, well, maybe it was to the point where, well, we gotta send the proofs off to the printer. It's too late now.
I'm sure every crew fan on Earth looks at that design and hopes that Anthony Precourt is the one that drew that. So then they could just do another, just make fun of Anthony Precourt even more and be like, what is this guy doing?
We can always blame Anthony Precourt. Like,
it's just the fact
that it's from Austin just makes it that it's just low hanging fruit.
Yeah, and what's crazy is that they're gonna play Jamaica in Austin. Trying. Jamaica wears green in a whole stadium that the seats are all green. I've never seen so much green in a stadium before in my life. So, but it'll be plenty
because of how many people are not attending games right now.
Yeah, no, I think that game, I think it's sold out. I think they already said it's sold out, but that's a big game. Jamaica had a horrible start to qualifying. Oh, they've got a talented roster. The U.S. needs to win some home games. They didn't in Nashville against Canada. You got to have better performances. The first window, you had five very uninspiring halves, and then one second half that was amazing against Honduras with Ricardo Pepi igniting the flames of the USA attack. Got to beat Jamaica. Probably got to beat Panama in Panama City, but they're probably going to try and kill some of these players, a very aggressive team. And then the big game in Columbus against Costa Rica.
Yeah, well, what do you make of Jamaica? Because I expected way more from them than what we've seen.
Yeah, I did too. Jamaica's got a good roster. I mean, just taking a look at the players that they're going to have on the roster, you got Andre Blake, who was phenomenal against the Crew in the second half of that game on Sunday. He made some phenomenal saves, one of the best goalkeepers in MLS. He's on the Jamaican squad. You've got Liam Moore from Reading, a couple other MLS guys like Kamar Lawrence and O'Neill Fisher. But to me, the most notable player is Mikel Antonio of West Ham, who's one of the top scorers in the Premier League. He's had a great start to the season. West Ham looks like one of the contenders to maybe finish in the top six this year.
Yeah, he's a really nice player.
Yeah, he's strong. He played right back for West Ham 5 years ago, and he excelled in that position too. So this is the all-time West Ham goal scorer in Premier League play. And this is the guy who used to play right back, which is insane. So, and he changed to Jamaican nationality, the one-time change, similar to what Zelarayan did between Argentina and Armenia. So this is a talented roster that just got off to a bad start. They lost at home, their first home game of the session. Let me just double check who it was against here, because they lost to Mexico in Mexico to start.
Right,
they,
which is not losing surprising. At home
to Panama. Yeah, they lost 3-0 to Panama in Kingston. That's not good enough for Jamaica. And then they drew at Costa Rica. So they've got two road games against the U.S. and Honduras. They're playing at home against a really good Canadian squad. If Jamaica don't get at least one win out of these next three games, then their chances are probably just non-existent at this point, because this CONCACAF octagonal is essentially North America against the Caribbean and Central America.
Yeah.
Which is the first time we've been saying that ever, because Canada hasn't made the World Cup since 1986. And you've got Mexico, Canada, and the United States as the top three teams.
Yeah. And
it's North America right there.
Yeah. Canada is legit. After we played them, this is a good team. And
Tejan Buchanan is phenomenal. He's only getting better.
Yeah. I mean, this is, and for Canada, and I don't, you know, obviously it's like they're going to take hockey way more seriously. This team is really going to capture the imagination of that country. They haven't been in the World Cup since 1986. This has been a generation and a half in the wilderness. I mean, and not competitive at all, even a little. And it's not just him. It's like our own Liam Fraser is part of that team. That is a good team.
Very good. Alfonso Davies, Jonathan David. Yeah, they should get through.
Yeah, I expect them to play in Qatar, and good for them. You know, USA is sort of like, yes, we definitely improved our chances during the last window, but we need to see a lot better. And for Jamaica, they are desperate. And to lose 3-0 to Panama, that was absolutely devastating because it kills their goal differential. You know, to lose like that, it can't happen. So we got that coming up in Austin on Thursday.
By the way, speaking of national teams and the crews qualifying for the playoffs, with how many players you have gone in the next few days?
Yeah,
I don't think this is looking any better.
Yeah,
we have Diaz going to
Diaz will be with Costa Rica. Frazier will be with Canada. Zardes was called up to the USA team. I think that's expected. So Zardes and Diaz will be in Columbus for the game against each other. Jonathan Mensah will be in Africa with Ghana again. And then, of course, Zelarayan being the most notable call up to Armenia, which is, again, kind of crazy.
Those Armenia national team TV game viewing numbers are going to go way, way up.
We'll get to that here in a moment, because I cannot wait to watch those games. I'm so curious to see how they use them and how they compete. They have Romania and Iceland coming up. We'll get to that here in a moment. On the 10th, USA at Panama. And Ori, you kind of made mention to the fact that you expect a pretty rugged style of play from Panama.
Yep, that's sort of what they like to do. They're a rough and tough team. They're not nearly as talented as they were when they made the World Cup in 2018. 2018, that was kind of sort of the back end of their golden generation with Torres and Blas Perez being their top striker. And again, Panama made that World Cup because the U.S. lost to Trinidad and they got lucky on like a goal that should never have counted in the pre-VAR era. But still, they made that World Cup. They scored a goal against England. Good for them. Tied Tunisia. But I don't see this Panama team making the World Cup this year. But hey, if they can get a win against the U.S. in Panama City on Sunday, then their chances are that much better. So we have to see how the U.S. responds to playing on the road, again, in a very hostile environment, like we saw against El Salvador and Honduras.
Yeah, I mean, if I know in the past, talking to guys like Brian McBride and Kyle Martino and Frankie Haydock, that Honduras was always the one that they go, oh, God, it's such a hard place to play, because they always put us in that city that's like the murder capital of the Western Hemisphere. And it's, you know, you get bags of urine and batteries thrown at your head and they keep you awake all night, try to turn your bus over. Where does Panama rate on that scale as far as road games?
No idea. I don't follow Central American or Caribbean fan hooliganism, I guess would be the area of study in that regard. But it's going to be a packed house. The Panama fans are passionate. I mean, that's sort of the biggest thing. This for most of these countries in CONCACAF, this is their sport.
Beating the USA is everything. It's everything.
Yeah, right? but this is their sport. You know, all these USA soccer fans, I'm sure there's plenty of them, but they've also got their baseball team. They also got their NFL team.
Right.
And at the same time, US national sports, they succeed on an Olympic level in team sports. The women's soccer team, of course, basketball, men's and women's, Winter Olympics. You'll see the curling and the ice hockey teams playing well. So the US has other sports that you can invest in. Fans can show up to and enjoy. I'm not saying that there's going to be American Outlaws at USA curling matches. That would be awesome if there was. I can't wait for the Winter Olympics. But, you know, Panama, this is it. Panama, Costa Rica, Honduras, these countries, this is the life. This is the sport. This is the language of the world. Football is the language of the world. And for countries like Panama and Costa Rica, Honduris, that might not have a very high GDP, they have a lot of tough sort of circumstances in those countries. Governments have been corrupt in the past for a lot of them. You know, this is a way of life, and this is a way to sort of bring joy and happiness into people's lives. And they're going to be raucous in that environment. They're going to be excited to play against the USA and beat them. They want to beat them. And I think they can. That's a big home game for them. And the USA has to play just as well as they did in that second half against Honduras to beat a physical Panama side.
So, and of course, we have a little bit of a breaking news relevant to the USA Jamaica game.
Okay.
Mikel Antonio is not going to join Jamaica.
Oh, really? So they didn't let him go, basically, right?
No, he's saying that there's all sorts of travel. It says Myself, West Ham United, and Jamaica have all agreed that given the logistical and travel difficulties involved at present, it is better for me to remain with the club in London at this time.
Well, we talked about this, that Premier League players in third world countries are being held back from going and representing their countries, which is a whole other can of worms.
Well, players in England, too.
Well, getting out of Europe in general.
With COVID, it's obviously way more complicated, so I don't want to read too much into that. Well, that's a blow for Jamaica.
Yeah, certainly. They'll have Andre Gray at striker, so he will probably, I would expect, be the starting striker at that point. I know Leon Bailey either. I don't think Leon Bailey's on the squad. He's on Aston Villa. He's a great player, too.
Yeah. Well, they certainly have a lot of talent. Just trying to get it all where it needs to be. Yeah. USA and Costa Rica here in Columbus on October 13th. That's another team like Jamaica where I expected them to be in a bit better of a position. Am I wrong, Nori?
I think it's a little early for Costa Rica. I mean, let's double check to see who have they played in that first window. I mean, basically that first window, Mexico and Canada were just great. And then the U.S. just had a phenomenal second half to get that point. But yeah, two ties for Costa Rica at Panama and then at home against Jamaica and then losing to Mexico. So a tough start for them. You know, they did play two home games, but Mexico is always a tough team to beat. Mexico is the best team in the region. Unable to beat Jamaica at home, I think, is a little bit disappointing. But Costa Rica starts with Honduras. I think that's a game that they should win. I think they should beat El Salvador.
Yeah.
Then here in Columbus against the United States, this is the second this is the second most important home game for the USA in this window. Mexico being the most important in Cincinnati next month. And yeah, Costa Rica's got plenty of good players. You know, Randall Leal from Nashville, of course, goalkeeper wise. They have Keylor Navas. Keylor Navas is one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And he doesn't even play every game because PSG is rich and signed the Euro player of the tournament, Gianluigi Donnarumma, to play in the Champions League. But it'll be really cool to see Keylor Navas play here in Columbus with Luis Diaz, Randall Leal, Joel Campbell, Duarte. I think Gonzalez might be on the squad, the former Cruz center back. I could be wrong.
Oh, okay.
But a homecoming for Greg Berhalter and Zach Steffen, of course, returning to Ohio's capital, now getting more news coverage for the Urban Meyer situation.
Right.
But it'll be fun for Zach Steffen and Greg Berhalter to be back in Columbus.
How much has Zach played for Man City this season so far?
I don't think at all.
No. The pinnacle, one of the pinnacles of professional soccer, obviously the English Premier League. And it's like, it's one thing to get there. It's another thing to play.
Yeah. And it's tough to beat out Ederson. Ederson's probably a top five goalkeeper in the world. Maybe the best passing goalkeeper on the planet.
Well,
perfect for Pep.
As competitions come up, you have the FA Cup coming up. You have the League Cup, which is underway as well. You have all these competitions that, then we'll see Zach Steffen more because Man City is one of those clubs that they got a lot of games. So I guess I mentioned that because we want him to be sharp. So it's kind of hard to stay sharp.
Yeah, because right now, I would say the U.S. goalkeeping job is Matt Turner's to lose. Matt Turner has played the last nine competitive games for the U.S. and he's been phenomenal for them.
He has
six clean sheets. I think Matt Turner is the number one right now. I want to see Steffen play. I think Steffen's more talented than Turner, but I think the way Turner's been playing, it's tough to not put Turner as the starting goalkeeper.
Yeah, I can certainly see what you're saying. And, you know, to Greg Berhalter, it comes down to not only putting the right players in the right position, but you want the room to come with you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And certainly I think that starts with having the goalkeeper that the guys feel best about, and nothing against Zach Steffen, but you're right. I mean, Turner has been great. So if it ain't broke, we'd like to see him, but maybe we won't. All right. Before we close things off, because I know Ori wants to watch the Yankees game, Lucas is in Armenia now training with the Armenian national team. For those of us or those that weren't in on the conversation of the last podcast, Ori, give me a brief Cliff Notes version of how this all came together.
Well, Zelarayan was invited to join the Armenian national team 3 years ago, and he accepted the invitation this past month. They worked together with the Armenian Federation and obviously with FIFA, and then talked to the club and basically figured out a way for him to switch nationalities. You're only allowed one nationality switch, And we talked to him this past weekend. He told us that his father was born in Argentina, but he's of Armenian descent because Zelarayan is an Armenian last name. So I think part of the decision came from the fact that Zelarayan is, you know, an MLS All-Star already. He's made a huge impact here with the Columbus Crew. And I think he wants the chance in the prime of his career to play international soccer. And he had this connection with Armenia. He probably would not get a chance with Argentina, as them being such, you know, an amazing team, Copa America champions, one of the best teams in the world. So being able to play for Armenia was something that he wanted to take advantage of. And he did. And now he's with the squad. He's never been to Europe before. This is the first time ever he's been to Europe.
That's and great. His first and it's trip not even Europe. It's Western Asia, right? Armenia.
No, it's Europe. He'll be in Iceland this Friday.
Oh, right. Yes, you're
they're
right.
Gonna be,
yes.
They're going to be in Reykjavik to take on Iceland, who made the World Cup in 2018. That's their first game.
Isn't that absolutely insane?
Yeah, and then they'll be in Bucharest. I mean, how about that? What's crazy is Crew players are going to be all over the world. I mean, Zelarayan's going to be in Reykjavik and Bucharest. You've got Mensah, who will be in Cape Coast, Ghana, and Harare, Zimbabwe for two Africa Cup African qualifying matches. Jossie Zardes will be here in Columbus and Austin. He's going to be in Panama City. You've got Diaz in San Jose, Costa Rica, San Pedro Sula, Honduras. Liam Fraser will be in Mexico City. He'll be in Kingston. He'll be in Toronto. There'll be Crew players all over the world. I love international football. I love what it brings because the World Cup is my all-time favorite sporting event, and it's also really cool to see Crew players be a part of that. So if you want to watch Zelarayan in Armenia, ESPN Plus is the place to watch all European qualifiers. And then for all the CONCACAF guys and Mensah, Paramount Plus is the place to watch those games. You can watch African qualifiers. They are available on stream on Paramount Plus.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm glad I have ESPN Plus because I'm definitely all in watching Jossie Zardes, who has his first experience in Europe in, of all places, Iceland. So
you mean Zelarayan?
Zelarayan. I'm sorry.
Zardes will switch Armenia.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do two things at once here. I want to check the weather in Iceland.
It's gonna be great. ESPN Plus will have their streaming demographics for the Iceland Armenia game, and they'll see. Wait, we had 55% of the viewers for this game in Columbus, Ohio. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be chilly. The country is literally called Iceland, and I'm not getting it to come up. So my problem is I don't know how to spell Reykjavik.
So it's a lot of consonants.
R-I-J.
No.
No?
I have it in front of me. R-E-Y-K-J-A-V-I-K. You need more vowels in there.
All right. Will you fire that in real quick? You got it. I know. So yeah. Romania, they play Armenia coming up. They have Germany on the 8th as well. That's a Friday. Man, these games on the ESPN platforms. Good Lord.
Yeah, it's
there's a lot to keep track of here.
I know.
So how's Germany doing?
Germany's doing well right now. They won 6-0, I think, against Armenia last window. Yes. And they're angry after getting knocked out by England at the Euros in the round of 16. Yeah. They need a bounce back tournament badly, you know, not making it out of the group stage of 2018, not even getting to the quarterfinals of the Euros in 2020. Hugely disappointing for Germany. So they need to come out hard and fast for this qualifying, and they need to get to at least the quarterfinals in Qatar in 2022.
And they beat Iceland 4-0 during the last window as well. Really, this is like this Iceland-Armenia match is like it's everything to those two countries. They especially Iceland. They are really behind the eight ball, and they were so good.
Armenia-Romania is going to be really important too. Those two teams are neck and neck in the table, and Armenia's in second place right now. Second place gets you a playoff spot for the last three UEFA spots. So if Armenia can hold on to second place ahead of Romania, Iceland, and North Macedonia, that would be a massive achievement. But then we have to see who they have to play in their playoff path. But if Lucas Zelarayan can help Armenia make their first ever World Cup, that would be incredible for him to continue his rise in his career.
Are they done playing Liechtenstein? Because they're also in the group.
Oh,
Liechtenstein. And they drew with them. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's not a good result.
You have to win that game.
Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, San Marino, Gibraltar, those are the European nations that come to mind that you can never lose to. San Marino in particular. I think San Marino has maybe scored like 10 goals ever in World Cup qualifying, and I think they've won maybe one or two matches ever in their entire history.
Liechtenstein has scored one goal in this in this qualifying window, and it was against Armenia. For the, it's a country of like 5,000 people. You know, they're known for really World small. Cup downhill skiers, you know, Olympic downhill skiers. And that's right. it. It's a country with extreme wealth, but it's so small that no one lives there. You know, it's gorgeous, as I understand. But for them to be able to draw together a national team, and they're actually in this group, for Armenia to draw with them is really, really bad. So that certainly doesn't help. But we'll be pulling for Lucas against Iceland and Romania coming up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap this up so you can watch the Yankees game there, Ori.
That's Aussie Brewers. Yep. We love them.
We do?
Yeah, we do. Best bar in Columbus. Best place to be on earth. Aussie Brewers. If you're Brewers, why not be saucy with it? Go to Aussie Brewers. There we go.
I can subscribe the from the Master Report podcast.
I think Ori might be a little excited to go watch.
Oh, what happened?
Yankees. Stan hit a single off the monster. I thought it was a home run.
Oh, yeah. Well, Fenway Park will do that. All right. We'll let you get to that. Sam, thank you so much. Ori, thank you so much. I think we covered a lot of ground here tonight. We'll be back next week to do it again. And it's always fun to talk about World Cup qualifying, World Cup soccer. I love it. I'm with you guys. It's a lot of fun. Where does, real quick, Sam, where does your Egypt stand?
They play Libya, and they're second in the group right now. So Libya's top of the group. So they haven't lost any games. They haven't looked great. So they definitely need to beat Libya and kind of regain the top of the group. And I don't remember who else they play right offhand. But
all right, that's okay. Yeah. Well, I'll be pulling for them too, just for you. Sam, thank you. Ori, thank you. My name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CB929, if you would. I'd appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Another edition of the Master Report Podcast.